Okay, good morning. I'm going to call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, February 6th, and the time is 9 o'clock. With us this morning, senators with us is Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman. Good morning, Senator Dunleavy, and Vice Chairman Fairclough. So we do have a quorum to conduct business. Today's agenda is Senate Bill 29, the cruise ship wastewater discharge. It's my intent to hear from the administration on this bill today, and then we will hold it, hopefully take public testimony tomorrow. I want to allow plenty of time for members to ask the administration any questions that they may have so we can thoroughly understand the bill, the intent of the bill, and what the bill does. I understand there is another House bill that's actually on their floor today, so at some point in time these two bills may marry up, but we'll have to see. We can't control, as you know, the other body and what they do. So with that, is there any questions or comments that the committee members have before we get started on today's agenda? Okay, seeing none, then I'm going to ask Lynn Kent, Deputy Commissioner, if you could join us, please. Lynn is the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation, and she's going to give us an overview of the bill and tell us why this is the governor's bill, why the governor and the administration feel it's important for us to take action on this bill. So with that, Ms. Kent, and it looks like you have somebody with you. If you would introduce them as well, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Lynn Kent, and I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Department of Environmental Conservation. And with me this morning is Michelle Bonnet-Hale, and Michelle is the Director of the Water Division at Department of Environmental Conservation. First, I'd like to start out with an apology from Commissioner Hartig, who would love to be here today, but he's in Anchorage for Alaska Forum on the Environment, where he has multiple meetings on marine debris and meetings with our federal counterparts or federal leadership. So he sends his apologies for not being here. Mr. Chairman, what I'd like to do is give a little bit of history first, talk about the science advisory panel, and then I'll talk about what's in the bill and probably just as importantly, what's not in the bill. And that would be DEC's other authorities that continue to apply to cruise ship wastewater discharges. So if that works for you, I will proceed. Thank you. In a nutshell, the bill requires cruise ships to comply with the same discharge permitting requirements as other dischargers in the state. So that's kind of the very brief summary of the bill. But starting with the history here goes back more than 10 years to 1999. There was a time in history when cruise ships really weren't doing a very good job in treating their wastewater before it was discharged into Alaskan waters and in other places around the country. But by about 2004, they had all switched over, all of the vessels that were coming to Alaska and discharging here, had switched over to what we call advanced wastewater treatment systems. And these were the best technology in terms of treatment systems available at that time, and producing higher quality effluent than most of the shore-based sewage treatment facilities. In 2006, a ballot initiative was passed by the citizens of Alaska. It included provisions for taxing cruise ships and putting ocean rangers on board. But for our purposes today, that ballot initiative also required DEC to issue a permit to the cruise ships that want to discharge wastewater in Alaska. And again, Alaska waters go out to 3 miles. Beyond that are federal waters. And then most importantly, that ballot initiative required that the cruise ship wastewater discharge meet Alaska water quality standards at the point of discharge. And so what I'd like to do here is first describe the water quality standards and then what that point of discharge standard means in terms of the cruise ship discharges. So the Clean Water Act, Federal Clean Water Act, requires states to protect uses of water bodies. And uses include things like for fresh water, we have to be able to keep it clean enough that it can be used for drinking water. Marine waters have to be able to protect aquatic life. We have to be able to protect things like contact recreation, people who want to swim in it or recreate in the water. So there's a variety of uses that we're required to protect. And then what we have to do is set criteria for each pollutant at a level that would protect those uses. So in other words, we set in regulation requirements for how much of a particular pollutant can be in a water body while still protecting the uses of that water body. There's a process for setting those standards. We rely on the latest science in terms of setting the standards. We public notice them. They're adopted in regulation. And then we really can't use them until EPA has approved them. So there's quite a process for setting those standards. And there's nothing in the legislation that proposes to change those standards that apply to protection of a water body. Again, those standards are set so that they relate to the water, the ambient water, so the ocean, lake, river, streams. That's where they apply because that's where the contact with aquatic life or humans can occur. We use those standards to evaluate permits to discharge treated wastewater into that water body, and we set permit limits to protect those uses, again, in the water body. So now turning just to a minute, for a minute to the point of discharge requirement, what that means is that cruise ships are required to meet the standards to protect the uses, like aquatic life, in the pipe before it's discharged into the water body. And that's in very much contrast to other dischargers in the state and how we treat them in terms of permitting. When we consider permits for all other treated wastewater discharges from other types of facilities, they're allowed to request approval for a mixing zone. And a mixing zone is something that it's an authorization that's established in a permit that's gone through a public review and comment period. And it's an area, it's an exception to the water quality standards. And basically it says that a discharger can discharge into an area in a water body where there can be exceedances of the water quality standards so long as all of those standards are met at the edge of that mixing zone. This approach is approved by EPA and it's in use by all other states. Mixing zones recognize that it's really difficult for many dischargers to meet water quality standards at the point of discharge, so they have this this little bit of relief through the permitting process. People don't just get a mixing zone. There's a 19-part test in DEC regulations that I won't go through all the requirements, but I'll just give you a few examples of types of requirements that have to be met. One is that the effects, DEC is required to look at the effects, including cumulative effects of multiple dischargers. So that would not just mean the cruise ships, but any other dischargers into the same water body. The effluent has to be treated to remove, reduce, and disperse the pollutants using the most effective technology and economically feasible, technologically and economically feasible, and at a minimum consistent with statutory and regulatory treatment requirements. Mixing zones can't be authorized if they would create a public health hazard that would preclude or limit existing uses of the water body for water supply or contact recreation. They can't preclude or limit established processing or fishing. They can't result in a reduction in fish or shellfish populations, and the list goes on. Those are just some of the examples of the requirements in order to get a mixing zone. Our permits state the conditions of discharge, the permit limits to comply with the mixing zone, and there are monitoring requirements. Based on the 2006 Citizens Initiative, that law actually precluded DEC from issuing permits to cruise ships only, not to any other dischargers, precluded us from issuing permits with mixing zones for treated cruise ship wastewater. We had been requiring monitoring of cruise ships' treated wastewater, but they weren't able to meet the stringent requirement to meet all of the water quality standards at the point of discharge. They were meeting most of them. In 2009, the legislature passed HB 134 that gave temporary relief, allowing cruise ships to have mixing zones, but that authority sunsets in December of 2015. HB 134 also convened a science advisory panel that was to advise DEC on a number of things, and I'll talk about those in a second. But the panel's had 11 members. They have a variety of expertise, and their mission was to look at the wastewater treatment systems currently on board and the level of effluent quality that's achieved by those advanced wastewater treatment systems. They were to look at whether or not there were new and emerging technologies that could do a better job. And they also were to look at the engineering and economic feasibility of making improvements to the effluent quality. So their main mission, again, was to look at treatment methods that would result in cruise ships meeting the water quality standards at the point of discharge. The panel met 14 or 15 times. All their meetings were open to the public. They reviewed a tremendous amount of data. They looked at issues on board vessels, at space, energy requirements, the treatment systems. Those who hadn't been on cruise ships went on board to look at the systems. So they had a huge amount of information that they were consuming and evaluating. In terms of their findings, what they found was really not too much of a surprise in this regard. They found that the cruise ships meet all of the water quality standards at the point of discharge, with the exception of four parameters: ammonia and three dissolved metals that are copper, nickel, and zinc. So they were doing very well on everything else. They just couldn't meet it on four parameters. Let's see, the panel concluded that the current systems, the advanced wastewater treatment systems that are currently on board the cruise ships that discharge treated wastewater in Alaska, are the most effective proven treatment systems that are available. And there are a variety of manufacturers for these types of systems, different configurations on board the vessels, different waste streams. So there is some variation in the effluent quality from ship to ship. But as a class, they were determined to be the best type of treatment available. The Science Advisory Panel also did not find any silver bullet treatment method that will allow cruise ships to meet all of the water quality standards at the point of discharge for those remaining four parameters in the near future. Finally, the panel concluded that given the current quality of effluent and the very large dilution factors in the ocean, there would be very little, if any, demonstrable environmental benefit in requiring those cruise ships to adopt in the future potential additional treatment methods. They were questioning whether or not it made sense to have small incremental improvements, replacing equipment, making add-on equipment to the current treatment systems, and whether or not if you did that a few times, if it would still be economical when you're still not getting all the way to being able to treat to all four water quality standards at the point of discharge. Under DEC's other authorities, we can dictate the conditions of when, where, how, and what they can discharge. We can say they can't discharge in the harbor, all discharge in the harbor at the same time. We can say that they can only discharge underway, where there's immediate and tremendous mixing, and the water quality standards are met within seconds after the discharge. So we have a lot of authority and ability to dictate the nature of discharges into Alaskan waters to make sure we're protecting the uses. Under the legislation, all of DEC's water quality standards and permitting requirements would remain in place, as would DEC's authority to continue to look at potential future technologies and to require cruise ships to do an even better job in the future if those technologies become available. The panel report is an attachment to DEC's report that was submitted to the legislature in January. It's labeled a preliminary report, and that's using language from HB 135 that also called for a final report in January 2015, which is just before the relief from the point of discharge would expire. The panel's report, I think it's important to note, the panel's report is not a draft report. They very carefully called it a preliminary report. It's a complete and thorough evaluation of existing treatment systems and an evaluation of new and emerging treatment systems. And DEC has concurred with the panel's report. So that's the history of where we got to be here today looking at this bill. I'd like to talk a little bit about what the bill does. So SB 29 removes that point of discharge requirement, so the cruise ships would be allowed to apply for a mixing zone, and they can be treated like other dischargers in Alaska with one exception, and that one exception is that there will be a statutory requirement for them to continue to use an advanced wastewater treatment system if they want to even meet the threshold to apply for a mixing zone. So what that does is remove a requirement that's impossible for them to meet right now. Next, the bill gives DEC guidance on what advanced wastewater treatment systems are, and it also allows for us to consider an application for a mixing zone for treatment systems that basically treat to the same level of quality that the advanced wastewater treatment systems treat to. We've mostly been talking about large cruise ships. Those are vessels that have greater than 250 lower berths. But there are small commercial passenger vessels, too. The bill continues an option that was established by the legislature in 2009 for the small cruise ships to operate under what are alternative terms and conditions. So they do not have to have advanced wastewater treatment systems nor meet the point of discharge requirements. It would be extremely difficult for the smaller vessels to install advanced treatment systems on the vessels with very limited space. It also allows them to have their best management plans approved for 5-year terms rather than 3-year terms, and that's just consistent with basically all other permitting that the department does. The bill deletes an anti-backsliding law. So jargon that we use that basically means that a subsequent permit can't be any less stringent than the previous permit. And you might wonder why we're asking for deletion of that, and I'll explain that. We have an anti-backsliding provision in law for all of our other permittees, but that law allows for certain exceptions. The problem with the backsliding provision in the cruise ship law is that there are no exceptions. So, for example, if a cruise ship wants to reconfigure its wastewater treatment facilities in a way that maybe results in them treating one parameter a little less well in exchange for treating 3 or 4 others a lot better, we wouldn't be allowed to approve that. Another example might be if we were asking them via permit to do a one-time study, they'd be doing that study forever. We wouldn't be able to back off of that in subsequent permits. The bill includes a transition provision to allow the current general permit to be in effect until December 2015. We certainly could go in and amend the permit during that time or replace it during that time, but it allows for a seamless transition from the old law to the new law. The bill calls for the sunset of the science advisory panel, technology conferences, and the final report to the legislature. But again, it does not change existing statute that allows us to continue to look at technology improvements into the future and to continue to require those when they become available. So the bill is very much in keeping with how DEC looks at wastewater discharges. We regulate based on effects on water quality rather than who the discharger is. So we don't treat any industry differently when we're looking at what's coming out of their pipe and into our waters. The changes would put cruise ships more in line with how we permit all of those other wastewater dischargers, and it is a logical conclusion to what's been a very long process. So given that we're in the Finance Committee here, we'll talk a little bit about the fiscal note. We've submitted a zero fiscal note with this legislation. None of the changes to the permitting regime will have a fiscal impact on the department. The department's operating budget for cruise ship permitting and our water quality work is paid for by a legislative appropriation from the Commercial Passenger Environmental Compliance Fund, and that is funded with a cruise ship passenger fees. When HB 34 passed in 2009 that created the Science Advisory Panel, we did not ask for additional resources. We were expecting that what we could do is defer some of our other work for a few years while we were working with the panel, and that we would only go back to the legislature if we found that we couldn't do that within our existing operating budget. But what we found was that we have been able to fund their work within the existing budget, and we are looking forward to returning to some of that work that's been deferred for the past few years. I thank the committee for hearing the bill, and we're certainly available for questions.
Okay, thank you very much for that introduction to the bill. We do have some questions.
Thank you to the chair. Just a brief question, Deputy Commissioner. Our own ferry systems, is it held to the same standards as the cruise ships, higher or lower?
Senator Dunleavy, through the chair, cruise ships in Alaska, I believe there are 5 that are considered to be small commercial passenger vessels, so they operate under best management practices and the alternative terms and conditions.
You said cruise ships. You're referring to the the ferries. Is our ferry system held to a higher standard than the cruise line ships that are referenced in the bill, the same standard or a lower standard?
Senator Dunleavy, through the chair, I'm sorry, I probably said cruise ship when I meant ferries. There are 5 ferries, state ferries, that are considered small commercial passenger vessels, and they are regulated under the same terms and conditions as other small commercial passenger vessels.
Go ahead.
Just one more time. Are they held to a equal standard requirement, a higher or a lower?
Senator Dunleavy, through the chair, they're held to the same standard as all other small commercial passenger vessels. So they have to submit a plan for alternative terms and conditions and best management practices.
Thank you.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, let me restate Senator Dunleavy's question. Is the ferry of the Alaska Marine Highway System held to the same standard as these cruise ships that are obviously greater than 250 berths that are out there?
Yes, Senator, through the chair. The way the law is set up, there are large commercial passenger vessels that are those vessels that are have greater than 200 or 250 or more lower berths. And there are small commercial passenger vessels that are 249 lower berths or smaller. The large commercial passenger vessels have a permit requirement. They have the point of discharge requirement for the water quality standards that they will have to meet in 2015, absent any changes to this bill. The small vessels, of which five Alaska Marine Highway System vessels are considered small commercial passenger vessels, have to comply with the same requirements as the other small commercial passenger vessels. They are not, at this point, required to meet the point of discharge, the water quality standards at the point of discharge, like the large vessels will be.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I could restate the answer that I just heard. The answer is yes, they are held to the same standard.
Yes, Senator, they are.
Okay, that's all we wanted to know. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Fairclough. Did you want to follow up a little bit more on that? I see you were having a little counseling session there. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just like the large vessels, the small vessels have relief right now from the point of discharge requirement, from meeting water quality standards at the point of discharge. The current law removes that relief for the large vessels and for the small vessels at the end of 2015. So at that point in time, all of the cruise ships, large and small, would have a requirement to meet water quality standards at the point of discharge. So, thank you.
Senator Fairclough.
Thank you. Of the communities across Alaska that seek a discharge permit from onshore, can you give me a ballpark on how many communities do that?
Senator Fairclough, through the chair, I asked my staff for that same number, and they weren't able to quickly tease out the difference between those facilities that discharge to a freshwater versus a marine water, but there are over 100 that discharge to marine waters.
And so I believe Anchorage discharges to marine waters, is that correct?
Senator Fairclough, through the chair, yes, that's correct.
And how about Juneau? Does that discharge to fresh or to?
Senator Fairclough, through the chair, the Juneau Douglas plant has a marine discharge.
And if we were to to review those discharge permits compared to what is currently in law for cruise ships, and we were to look at ammonia, nickel, zinc, and copper, is the permit for the Southeast area or Juneau specifically, are their numbers higher or lower?
Senator Fairclough, through the chair, there are some unique circumstances for some of the discharges in Alaska to marine waters, the domestic wastewater dischargers, and there are, I believe, 7 communities that are authorized to discharge with only primary treatment, which is a relatively low level of treatment. All other marine dischargers are required to treat to what we call secondary treatment, which is a higher level of treatment. And I'm going to turn to Michelle Hale, the Director of Water, for a little bit of a comparison between the effluent limits and the permits for the shore-based facilities compared to those permits for the cruise ships.
Michelle.
For the record, my name is Michelle Bonnet Hale, and I'm the Director of DEC's Division of Water. I can't speak specifically to limits in individual permits because I don't have those here with me. But in general, many of the what we call domestic wastewater treatment facilities, like the Juneau Douglas treatment plant, They do have limits. Often they don't even have limits for the metals, for example, that are limited in the cruise ship general permit. The limits are set based on what is called a reasonable potential to exceed water quality standards or water quality criteria. So in general, those limits, when they do have limits, are for the domestic wastewater facilities are less stringent than the cruise ship general permit limits, and sometimes they don't have those same limits. They're limited for other constituents, but not the same ones often.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For those who might be listening at home, for clarity then, does that mean that the onshore can discharge at a higher level than the cruise ships currently can? That's a yes or a no.
Senator?
On those four items that I just asked you.
Senator Faircloth, through the chair, yes, sometimes.
I know that it's very difficult, and I don't mean to be splitting hairs, because I know that we're making a decision based on economics and the ability of some communities to be able to come into compliance, and that we're working continuously to raise those water quality standards. I'm just trying to understand, specifically in Southeast waters, along coastal communities that are making that choice and understand those consequences of the economics involved in reaching that higher attainment level, less discharge into the water, that those communities have made those decisions. And the industry now is moving forward and asking us for those same economic considerations. And I want to see if it's acceptable in Haines for them not to improve that system to a higher level that we would all like to see, or that I know specific with Anchorage, the consequences that would mean to our community as a whole, the money that would have to be invested. I just want to understand that those communities are making those same determinations through a public process. So that's where I'm trying to get to. So the last question would be, is there discharge then in the Haines and the Ketchikan area that those are discharging into marine waters would be the first point. And then do they have mixing zones?
Senator Faircloth, through the chair, the wastewater discharges from the domestic facilities, I think without exception, or maybe one exception, have permitted mixing zones. And again, those permits go through a 5-year review with public review and comment on them. You raise a good point in that for a community, it is very expensive to design, construct, and operate those facilities. And the facilities, I think, do a very good job within their means, and we continue to push them at each permit cycle to try to do better.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Do processors, fish processors, do? I have a biologist that's working for me, so I'll just say that I'm learning more about the marine environment every day. And we were talking about ammonia discharge, and I was asking whether, you know, fish have a process, and what do they expel? And they expel ammonia. And it might be more biodegradable than others. So when we are processing fish in marine waters, do they have to have mixing zone permits also?
Senator Faircloth, through the chair, in many cases, yes, they do need a mixing zone associated with their facility and their discharge. It's primarily for the discharge of the seafood waste, which they have to grind before they can discharge it.
So that would be primary versus the secondary treatment?
Senator Faircloth, through the chair, I hope I'm not causing too much confusion here. The primary and secondary treatment requirements only apply to domestic wastewater. So seafood processors are an industrial operation with an industrial discharge. So there aren't the same kind of primary, secondary type treatment requirements, but they do have a permit for their discharge from the processing activities, and those permits almost always include a mixing zone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Faircloth. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question goes to the mixing zones. You know, in Section 1 of the bill, we're removing more stringent requirements for discharge. And I know that the cruise ships have to apply for the mixing zones. Is the department looking at moving those mixing zones, or what is going to be the status of the mixing zones if we are going to remove the more stringent requirements for discharge? I don't see any address of that issue in the legislation. Is that going to be taken care of by the department, or is it anticipated that the mixing zones would stay the same?
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, again, the current law gives temporary relief to the cruise ships from meeting the water quality, all the water quality standards at the point of discharge. So in the current permit, they do have basically the equivalent of a mixing zone. Future permits in almost all circumstances are as stringent as or more stringent than previous permits. Right now, there are, in any given year, 27 or 28 cruise ships that come to Alaska. 17 or 18 of them are permitted to discharge in Alaskan waters, and only 7 of those are permitted to discharge while they're in port. And when they discharge in port under the terms of the permit, the effluent limits are more stringent than when they're underway. So via the permitting process, again, we have the ability to place a lot of controls on when, where, how they discharge, what they can discharge.
I guess my question is, given the removal of the stringent requirements, when they apply, are the mixing zones going to change? Are they going to be moved by the department, or is that anticipated, or is there going to be no change in those locations?
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, every time we do a permit cycle, those permits go through a public review and comment period. And we often get comments from the public on the when, where, why, and how of discharges. So I can't say that the mixing zones would never change, but perhaps I can characterize them a little bit for how they are in the current permit. When a vessel is underway and operating at 6 knots or more, there's a 50,000-to-1 dilution. So when the discharge occurs at the levels that we're requiring them to hold to under the current permit, the water quality standards are met within seconds of discharge. There is no trail of pollution behind the cruise ships that some people might be envisioning. For those vessels that discharge in port with even more stringent effluent limits, the water quality standards from those vessels are met within meters of the discharge point in the water body.
I guess my question, I guess if I might follow up, given the removal of the stringent requirements, do you feel that the mixing zones need to be further addressed in this legislation?
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, I don't believe so. I think we have all the necessary authority to ensure protection of water quality.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair, hopefully just a quick question. Early in your testimony, you said, I think it was, quote, it removes a requirement that is impossible to meet. Is that because the technology does not exist for them and anyone, or is it something else just inherent to the cruise industry?
Yes, Senator Dunleavy, through the chair, a previous science panel, a conference by DEC a number of years ago, the current science panel and the workshop that they held all arrived at the same conclusion that advanced wastewater treatment systems are the best there is right now. And while there are certain things that can be done in a laboratory or in other settings, there are no treatment systems available that can be installed on cruise ships right now that would allow them to meet water quality standards at the point of discharge.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a number of questions, if you don't mind.
No, go right ahead, please.
Obviously, point of discharge is the key to what we're discussing here and is one of the priority as to what's out there, but I'd just like to go back to the basic question: What are these vessels discharging when they are out there? Is it raw sewage? Is it gray water? And how is it treated? And how do? And if it is treated by something like chlorine, how do we know that some type of essentially bleach is not out there doing what's more harm to the environment, as was pointed out by Senator Faircloth?
Yes, Senator Olson, through the chair. The permit only allows cruise ships to discharge treated wastewater that's been through the advanced wastewater treatment system. Permit limits are set by right now by the type of treatment system that they have. Again, there are different manufacturers with a little bit varying levels of success in treating their wastewater, but they all are treated to a very high standard. When you get out beyond 3 miles in state regulation, the requirements are significantly less stringent. Under the federal regime, where they only have to have a type 2 marine sanitation device, which is basically a macerator and chlorination. I'm not sure if any of the vessels are using chlorination. I'll check here quickly if I can, or maybe Michelle knows. Oh, yes. The permit does include a limit for chlorine for those vessels that discharge in Alaska.
If I can continue, Mr. Chairman.
Please.
How do we know from the state standpoint what they are discharging when they're out there within these areas? I mean, are there samples that are taken, or how do they verify that what they're showing us on TV and watching their former senator drink from the whatever it was, that that's the same stuff that they've got discharging out there in the mixing zones? I mean, it was pretty impressive when a guy puts that kind of credibility into something that he's willing to take it in. That's impressive.
Yes, Senator, through the chair, the permit includes a lot of monitoring requirements.
Sure.
So they have to take their first samples within 10 days of their first visit to Alaska each year. They have requirements for monitoring some things daily, some things, and most of the things that we require them to monitor for, they do twice per season, and then those parameters that we're most concerned about, where they aren't meeting water quality standards at the point of discharge right now, so ammonia, copper, nickel, and zinc, they're required to monitor for those 2 times per month.
Okay. And as we look at some of these issues that are coming up in this particular bill, DEC obviously had a lot to do with it, and as we in DEC's opinion, as you look at some of the people that use the marine waters out there, whether they're commercial fishermen that are primarily getting fish that are coming up and down their way, or shellfish people that are out there farming on the depths there, and going all the way to subsistence and personal use gatherers, should they be concerned about the relief that we're giving some of these cruise ship industry ships that are out there cruising?
Senator Olson, through the chair, I don't believe so. The water quality standards, again, are designed to protect marine life in the water body, and given the dilution that's available and the high quality that comes off of the cruise ships, I don't think that there's a concern there.
Okay. As you go through the mixing zones that are out there and establishing them, are we going to be knowing where they are, or will DEC publish an area that they're showing where those mixing zones are so that we as people can know that, hey, this is a mixing zone, this is not a mixing zone?
Senator, through the chair, the mixing zones for cruise ships when they're underway would be limited by distance from shore and how fast the cruise ship is moving. We couldn't draw those on a map because they basically are only right next to the ship even when the ship is moving. There's no trailing mixing zone behind them.
But that's assuming they're going 6 knots.
Yes. Okay. And we've limited when they can discharge to having a certain speed and being underway. For those that are approved to discharge in a port, the mixing zone, again, is within meters of the vessel. So the concern about having overlapping mixing zones in port, first you'd have to have more than one of the 7 cruise ships that have been approved to do that in the port at the same time, and they'd have to be parked within meters of each other, which we know doesn't occur.
If I can continue, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, please do.
As you're looking at discharge, having been a commercial fisherman myself and having gone out there, we're always concerned about what's being put into the water. Obviously, we've seen some of the documentaries where out in the high seas, you've got a fair amount of trash that's going back and forth, which is made up of plastic as opposed to treated sewage. But has the DEC ever considered establishing some type of reasonable no discharge zone so that fishermen, whether it's shellfish or anadromous fish gatherers, can say that yes, this is an area I can have a fair amount of reasonable assurance that this area is a no discharge zone?
Yeah, Senator, through the chair, we do that sort of thing through the permitting process. And we've even done that for the small commercial passenger vessels by placing limits on them and regulation on areas where they can't go because they don't treat to the same level that the large cruise ships do.
Sure.
So we definitely have that capability and we do exercise it.
Okay. The sunset of the Science Advisory Panel, when is that supposed to take place, and what was the reason for putting a sunset on it when you have an ongoing, well, actually have an ongoing report, that's, the final report's not due till 2015?
Yeah, Senator, through the chair, the Science Advisory Panel, I believe, is due to sunset in at the end of 2015.
Yes.
They've done, the Science Advisory Panel has already done a very thorough look at technologies that are available. They've kind of reconfirmed what the previous science panel found and what the previous DEC conference on cruise ship wastewater technologies found. We're not really sure what we would ask them to do over the next 3 years, especially since DEC retains authority to do additional technology conferences when and if that makes sense, and to look at technology at least with every permit cycle.
I guess I find it somewhat, this bill somewhat being premature, since we don't have a final report out till 2015. That's 2 years from now. And right now we only have a draft, and as you pointed out, we don't even have a preliminary report. Why do we have legislation like this coming through before a final report has come out?
Yeah, Senator, through the chair, the Science Advisory Panel produced a preliminary report, not a draft report. It went through a lot of drafts. It's a complete final preliminary report. It's everything they know about the state of technology for cruise ships as it exists today, and it also projects that they don't think in the near future there will be any technologies that will allow cruise ships to meet all of the water quality standards at the point of discharge. There's no one technology or combination of technologies that will get them that last little bit to those last four parameters. So given that DEC has the authority to continue to look at technology and to do additional conferences in the future, we didn't see a need to continue to have the Science Advisory Panel in place.
My last question, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Senator.
You know, the nightmare that happens whenever you have inadvertent discharge into a proximity that's very close to land, very close to people, is one of those things that scares us. And we saw that issue happen when the Costa Concordia hit the rock out there. I didn't realize it was over there a long ways away, but certainly something like that could happen here. If that a ship was to have a disaster such as that, where goes over on its side and you do have inadvertent dumping into the areas, what kind of problems would we expect, and more importantly, how would this legislation deal with something like that, or does it deal with something like that?
Senator, through the chair, the existing law, and that doesn't change under this legislation, basically provides an exemption for discharges when they're made to protect life and safety at sea. If we were to have a Costa Concordia type accident, having some untreated sewage go into the water is probably the least of our worries. We'd be most concerned about human lives and oil spills, and kind of the worst case scenario is humans in the water with oil in the water, and we've seen that in the history of Southeast Alaska, and that's probably the worst situation. We do have an entire spill prevention and response division that works on preventing oil spills and responding to them when they occur.
With all due respect, Mr. Chairman, with all due respect, Ms. Kent, I think that obviously the life and health is there, but if you have diseases that are being held in some of those holding tanks, viruses and whatever else, as a medical doctor, I would be very concerned about what the people that are living along the shoreline are going to be encountering, especially if their kids are either swimming out there or if they are harvesting fish right from that area. Do we have any protection for them?
Yes, Senator, through the chair. I don't know if you would call this so much protection. I mean, in an incident like that, we couldn't stop a release. But one thing we do, we have a zero tolerance for contamination of seafood. So if there were nearby shellfish beds, for instance, and any kind of a discharge from an accident like that were to occur, we would probably shut down the consumption of that fish, that seafood, for a while.
Thank you,
Mr.
Chairman.
So we were sure it was safe.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Thank you for those series of questions. This meeting is for questions, so feel free to ask whatever you want to. But let me just follow up briefly, and then I'm going to go to Senator Fairclough. And also, I forgot to mention, this is the first meeting that I've been chairing, so I haven't consulted the co-chair. But when I was House chair and the finance committee, we had a rule, if the cell phone went off, you had to buy donuts. And so I think that's a good rule. Although I know we are trying, we have a doctor here, Dr. Olson, we are trying to be healthier. If you want to bring fruit, that's fine. But certainly let's turn off our cell phones. Let me just do a quick follow-up, and then I'll go to Senator Faircloth. You mentioned that technology today does not exist to meet the current standards that we have on the cruise ships, and I think you mentioned that you didn't see a need for the panel to continue, but you are, or DEC is, monitoring the latest. I mean, technology changes constantly, so that there could be a point in time in the near future where technology will be there where we can meet this higher standard, because I think we all want the highest standards possible for our water. So can you give us a little assurance that how you monitor this and how it's done?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are a couple ways that we do that and a couple places where DEC has authority to do that. One of them is right in our mixing zone regulations, which now I'm not finding them handy.
We can come back.
Yeah. Well, that authority in the mixing zone regulations requires anybody who applies for a mixing zone to be using the most, I'm sure I'll get the words wrong, technologically effective and economically feasible treatment methods, and it has to be consistent with any state and federal laws that pertain to that particular type of discharge. And then we have other statutory authority that allows DEC to look at technologies and to evaluate technologies and to, we don't regulate what kinds of treatment systems somebody has. What we regulate is what comes out of the end of their pipe. And so as there are treatment technologies that can do a better job, we can tighten the effluent limits on a permit. We don't tell them they have to go buy the newest, latest thing, but they have to find a way to meet those requirements if we know if there's a system available that will meet them.
Okay, and if I could follow up on that, do you work with other states? I mean, as far as finding out what is the latest, greatest technology, and how does our standards, our current standards, relate to what other states do for cruise ships in particular?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we do look at what other states are doing. There was for a time, Alaska had probably the only cruise ship program that we were aware of in the world. There are other states who are starting to look at requirements for cruise ships in terms of their wastewater discharges. I don't know about other countries now. I'm not sure we've done a recent look at that, but the panel, I believe, looked at it from a technology perspective and not so much from a standards perspective. And so we do track those things.
Okay, and if you could please, can you tell us who made up this panel? And maybe it's somewhere in our readings, and I missed it, but were these biologists or scientists? Or?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The law called for people on the panel to have experience with wastewater discharge, and it had some specific requirements. We had to have a representative of coastal community domestic wastewater management, a representative of the cruise ship industry, a representative of the commercial fishing industry, and a non-governmental organization with an interest in water quality matters. And the group that we ended up with had expertise in wastewater plant design and operation, wastewater engineering and science, ship engineering design and construction, environmental science, shipping economy, fisheries and environmental policy. We even had a couple members from Europe that we were importing for the face-to-face science advisory panel meetings who had a significant amount of experience with design of ships and actually designing wastewater treatment system to go on board the vessels. So I would say we were very lucky to have a pretty distinguished panel to look at the issues and provide advice and recommendations to the department.
Very good. And these were PhD types, or what?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, there were four or five PhDs on the panel, engineers. I don't remember all of their training and expertise. We had a university professor from Fairbanks who works with wastewater. There was a good variety of expertise on the panel.
And I think you said the fishing industry was represented as well?
Yes.
Very good. Let me go to Senator Fairclough, then I'll back to you, Senator Osteen.
Can you tell me how the Ocean Ranger program has been implemented and how many Ocean Rangers are monitoring discharge right now on cruise ships?
Thank you, Senator Fairclough, through the chair. The Ocean Rangers are another part of the Citizens Initiative that passed in 2006. And it basically requires a Coast Guard licensed marine engineer hired by the state of Alaska or contracted through the state of Alaska to be on board all large cruise ships entering Alaska waters. And their purpose is to monitor the cruise ship's compliance with state and federal environmental, sanitation, and waste laws. They don't have enforcement authority. They produce a daily report that comes to DEC. They note any exceptions. They don't conduct any actual monitoring, like water quality monitoring, but they look at the vessel's logs, their record books, they see where they're discharging, and their exceptions get reported to us. They're funded by a fee, again, on passengers, a passenger head tax. And I think last year in 2012, we were able to have Ocean Rangers on board about 88% of the passenger days in Alaska. It's pretty high coverage. We don't have coverage like that for any other industry.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to see where we were at because I knew that we were having, I don't want to say difficulty, but we were ramping up a training program to make sure that the Ocean Rangers could comply with that pair of eyes for Alaskans on each vessel. So we're getting closer and closer to 100%. Is that our goal for the Ocean Ranger program?
Senator Fairclough, through the chair, we would love to have all of the Ocean Rangers be Alaskans. We've had a lot of challenges finding a sufficient number of applicants with the requisite training and certification. And we also have the challenge of a seasonal job versus a year-round job. So even though there are lots of marine engineers in Alaska, they're mostly fully employed. We had 21 Ocean Rangers last year, and 7 of those were Alaskans. And so each year it creeps up a little bit, and we continue to do a lot of advertising and encouraging of Alaskans to apply.
Thank you. I have a couple questions, Mr.
Go ahead,
Chairman.
Please.
One more on the Ocean Rangers. Do we rotate those Ocean Rangers to different vessels, or are they assigned to one particular route? And where I'm driving is, if sometimes if people get comfortable in situations and become too much friends with the people that are around them, they may be complacent or not willing to report as aggressively as we might want them to. So can you tell me, is one person staying on one route with one crew, or do we rotate Ocean Rangers?
Senator Fairclough, through the chair, with 21 Ocean Rangers and 28 vessels, there has to be some rotation, but I don't know how often and how many vessels any Ocean Ranger in a given year is on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you give me a physical example of how a cruise ship underway, how we're testing mixing zones? Can you give me a visual so that I understand how that happens?
Senator Fairclough, through the chair, for mixing zones for a vessel that's underway, they're very different than a fixed mixing zone where you can go out and you can monitor water quality in the ocean at the edge of the permitted mixing zone to make sure that you're meeting the requirements and the water quality standards are met. Instead, for the vessels that are underway, we're relying on studies that looked at the level of dilution that occurs in the water immediately next to the discharge point when a vessel is underway, and there's those studies say that there's at least a 50,000 to 1 dilution that occurs really within seconds of that discharge. So beyond, a few seconds, you wouldn't be able to probably even detect that the discharge occurred in the marine waters. It's highly turbulent.
And of the discharge, again, for a visual, would that be clear or would it be gray water that's being discharged out of the pipe?
Senator Fairclough, through the chair, the terms gray water and black water refer to the the source of wastewater. So gray water comes from the galley and showers and the laundry, and black water comes from toilets. Once that wastewater is treated through an advanced wastewater treatment system, that water is clear.
Thank you. There, Mr. Chairman, if I might, is there a reason why we're not asking cruise ships to discharge into land-based systems?
Senator Fairclough, through the chair, there are vessels that do that right now. They don't have to have a permit from us to do so. There are challenges for the shore-based facility, and we can get into the details of that, but there are technical challenges associated with untreated cruise ship wastewater being very concentrated, and putting that into a system that doesn't normally deal with that level of concentrated waste, or treated cruise ship wastewater, which is very clean, causing dilution and problems in a shore-based facility. And they can handle some discharge or some influent from the cruise ships, but not all the vessels are doing that.
Thank you. And lastly, Mr. Chairman, it's been brought to my attention that we have some donut holes or areas that could be inside of where channels converge, that you could reach the 3-mile limit and effluent could be dumped. Can you talk to me about the current bill, and as proposed by the governor, does it still allow the donut holes or opportunities for discharge that is within the 3-mile limit? Well, actually, it's outside the 3-mile limit, but still inside of coastal communities' concerns, or does the governor's proposal eliminate the donut holes that are of concern to some fishermen?
Senator Fairclough, through the chair, we've eliminated those donut holes for purposes of the state permit via our own definition of waters that are covered. And so if they want to discharge in a donut hole, we consider that purpose state water for purposes of wastewater discharge. And
thank
it's
you,
required
Chair.
To have a permit.
Thank you, Senator Fairclough. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like you to go ahead and comment. You talked about the science advisory panel. If we go back to that issue again, I'd just like to have you comment on the issue. And I applaud you for the number of people that you had involved, whether they're PhDs or people that are on the ground who are dealing with their livelihood on a daily basis and may not have the academic type of credentials that are out there. But could you just comment on the idea that one of the distinguished scientists that was out there who has a degree in immunology and molecular genetics was actually removed or taken out from the panel?
Yes, Senator, through the chair. When we were first compiling the panel, we had a public solicitation for applicants, and we got a fairly large number of applicants for the panel, which was interesting to us. There was one candidate who we initially wanted to place on the panel, but there were concerns about the strong advocacy role that person had been playing in his involvement in the Citizens Initiative, and whether or not he would help the panel and contribute to the panel, or maybe detract from some of the panel's deliberations. And again, the panel's mission is really to look at wastewater treatment technologies. While we had people on there with an interest in water quality, certainly, the main thrust of the work was to find out if there are technologies out there that can do a better job.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to address the effective date. I see that in Section 7, it provides for an immediate effective date, and I'm wondering, does that cause any concern by the department for implementation versus a fixed time? Given the immediate effective date, we don't know when or if this particular bill would be signed by the governor, so I wonder if you might address that, and why have an immediate effective date versus having a fixed date for implementation of this law?
Thank you, Senator Hoffman, through the chair. We've tried to deal with this issue in part through the transition language on the existing permit, but the current permit expires in early April, and the first cruise ship is due into Alaska towards the end of April that needs coverage under that permit. So if the bill passes, we would have that ability to extend the current permit and not have a time crunch here with the cruise ships arriving again imminently.
So why not have an effective date of April 1?
Senator Hoffman, the legislature can certainly...
But I'm asking what the department's position is on the immediate effective date versus a fixed effective date that the department would support.
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, I guess we hadn't really considered alternatives to that, but we certainly could.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Okay, any other questions? I think I've made a few comments here. I just want to make sure we're all clear on the different requirements for, I think, Senator Dunleavy, you started this, and then Senator Olson, and I'm not sure I'm still clear, but so we have different standards for our ferries that are under 250 passengers versus the cruise ships that are above the 250. Is that correct? They're more stringent, the more passengers that you have?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The law makes a distinction between large commercial passenger vessels and small commercial passenger vessels. The state ferries, five of them, are considered small commercial passenger vessels. Both the large vessels and the small vessels have relief right now under the current law until 2015 for meeting the point of discharge, this water quality standards at the point of discharge requirement. So without this legislation, that requirement would take effect for the 2016 cruise ship season for both large and small vessels.
So if I hear you correctly, our large commercial or our large ferries are not held at the same standard as we are the cruise ships, but they will have to by year 2015.
Mr. Chairman, the five state ferries, the difference is that right now only the large commercial passenger vessels have to have a permit from DEC.
Okay.
The small vessels, including those five ferries, have to submit a plan for alternative terms and conditions and comply with that plan. In 2015, they all have to meet water quality standards at the point of discharge. They all have to have a permit.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Is that right?
Any other questions?
Restate what I think I've heard you say, which was not exactly the question you answered when I took over from Senator Dunleavy. It's that the state ferries are under the same standard as small vessels because they are less than 250 berths, so that indeed the cruise ships that have over 250 berths are held to a stricter standard for this wastewater discharge.
Senator, through the chair, that's correct for right now.
Sure.
Okay, very good. Yeah, thank you for clearing it up, Senator Olson. And then let me just follow up to another question that Senator Fairclough had on the Ocean Rangers, because I too am not totally sure what they were required as part of the initiative process as well. But I think you said that is part of their job, is to monitor the discharge.
Mr. Chairman, the Ocean Rangers do look at the activities that are occurring on board the vessel for compliance with state and federal requirements. When you say monitor, that means one thing to DEC and something else probably to other people. To us, when we think about monitoring, we generally think about taking a sample and using chain of custody and sending that sample to a laboratory for analyses. But the Ocean Rangers monitor in the sense that they are on board and they are watching the activities of the vessel as it's in Alaskan waters. They're looking at the logbooks for when they're discharging and when they aren't discharging. When did they open the valves? Did they have any upsets to the system? So they're more of, I would say, eyes and ears.
Okay.
And again, this legislation doesn't change the Ocean Ranger program at all.
Very good. And so let me just summarize, if I may. The reason why And the purpose of this bill is that currently, through the initiative process, the cruise ships are held at a higher standard than any other vessels in the state. And I don't want to put words in your mouth.
That's correct.
And that higher standard is not, it's impossible to meet with current technology.
Mm-hmm.
So the purpose of this bill is to lower the standard. I hate to use that word lower because we want to keep the standard as high as possible, but at least have a standard that they can meet with current technology. Is that the intent of this bill?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Thank you very much. Okay, any further questions from the Senate Finance Committee? Seeing none, well, thank you very much for spending your time with us this morning, answering our questions, introducing the bill, and we will tomorrow now hear from the public. We'll spend the whole day for public testimony tomorrow. Friday, we'll continue with this bill, take any amendments that the committee members may have, any additional public hearing that may be necessary, and then we'll see where we go on Friday. So with that, is anything else that the committee wants to bring up or discuss? Like I said, we will monitor too what the you have the same bill in the House, and I think they're further along than we are. So if that does come over, we'll probably end up pairing the two. But we'll just see what happens in the next couple days. Okay, if there's nothing else to come before the Senate Finance Committee, it's 10:05. We're adjourned.